Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I wish you bluebirds in the spring to give your heart a song to sing and then a kiss. But more than this, I wish you love.
Thank you, Don. It's 10:11 on WGN. This is John Williams. You know, it is spring.
And in July, a lemonade.
John Williams here in the Allstate Skyline studio working with Ashley Byhun, as she reminded me to pronounce her last name. Just think Byhun. Ashley Byhun's in for Griffin Filipich. Griffin's taking the day off. Good to have Joe Brand there, Don Kleppen, and we're here until, as always, 12 noon. A couple differences on the show today, though. In the 11 o'clock hour, we go to Arizona and check in with Steve Cochran, Rokan, Dave Ennett, and Kevin Powell. We'll talk a little White Sox baseball and bring you warm sunshine from Arizona in the 11 o'clock hour.
We could never be. So with my very best, I'm gonna have to set you free. And oh, hey, baby, I wish you shelter from the storm.
Mary Schmeek in the Chicago Tribune today had a pretty good piece about spring. I'll just read part of it. You can read it all online and in print. Mary Schmeek wrote, "Spring came a few days ago. Ignore the fact that we hardy citizens of the northern latitudes are still wearing coats. Here's a guide to making the most of this fickle season. Number one, watch a window. Wash a window. In the dull gray days of winter, you did not notice how filthy your windows were, but now the days get longer and brighter, the sun streams in, and the truth is revealed. Your windows are as filthy as the sidewalk gutters. Remember, clean window, clear mind. Number two, put your monster winter coat away. In Chicago, you'll need a coat until June, but you don't need that big bulky one. Remember, lighter coat, lighter heart. Number three, look, really look at a tree. The closer you look, you'll see the reliable miracle. All those small red sprouts eager to turn into leaves. Think of Philip Larkin's great spring poem, The Trees, which begins, the trees are coming into leaf like something almost being said. Number four, listen to the birds. She goes on. Number five, find some flowers. Plan a summer trip. Number eight, wash your car. I did that in a light sprinkle on Thursday. Remember Thursday? It was kind of damp. It rained early. I said, I don't care. The car's getting washed inside and out. Neighbors paused while I was doing this. I didn't care. Number nine, go outside. Mary Schmeek has a list of things you can do on a cool spring day. Warmer weather and spring are coming. It's March Madness, and it's the baseball season right around the corner. The White Sox begin their season on WGN Radio Thursday. Here's Joe Brand with a prediction of how many games the White Sox will win.
Who?
Thank you, Joe. Let's go to Don Kleppen. How many games will the White Sox win this season?
27.
Let's go back to Joe Brand.
I will flip those two digits and go 72.
Let's go back to the dyslexic Don Kleppen.
I'll tweak it to 32 now.
Just stop that.
No, they're going to be great.
Stop that right now. They're not going to be great. Here's what they won't do. They won't win 100. They'll win more than 60. I have them at 81 because that's the way I roll.
Nice.
At totally even, Steven, so you can't really take a side then?
500 is the new playoffs for the White Sox.
It could work.
No, they won't be in the playoffs, but I mean, I'll tell you what, if they won half of their games this year, that would be the kind of progress that sets us up for next year. Never before walking into a season have I been more excited about the season following the one I'm about to get to. Which is not a knock on the White Sox, but it's more about Michael Kopech and Jimenez having an extra year under his belt and just those kids getting, Cease getting a year under his belt, just those kids getting ready.
Dane Dunning, another one too, that unfortunately having to go Tommy John surgery. So, yeah, he'd be another one of those up-and-comers for 2020. No, that's fair. It's a fair assessment. And this is one of those fun years where there's not too much pressure. You're just kind of looking at individual battles and individual accomplishments with certain players. I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on guys like Yoan Moncada and Lucas Giolito this year because this could be somewhat big years for them.
I hope so. Moncada was one of those guys who you thought was it. And at times he shows it, and other times you go, why did you swing at that pitch? But, boy, wouldn't it be nice to see him just develop so that next year all the pieces fell into place.
Well, the other thing is, if you compliment him with some star players or players that come up with a bunch of expectations and do perform, you take some of that pressure off of him, and then hopefully he doesn't have to carry the whole load, because I feel like most eyes were on him last year than any other player, and that's 100% true. You could take a look at Giolito or Reynaldo Lopez, but they're one every 5 days. I mean, every time Yoan Moncada swings and misses at a slider low and away, that's going to be written down and scoured and remembered for the rest of eternity. But now some other names are popping up. Hopefully he can share the load. Now all the eyes are going to be on Eloy Jimenez this year.
Big talk, of course, today is, too, about the NCAA brackets, and the big talk today is about the Mueller report, which is in. By the way, I did a little reading in the Wall Street Journal today, CNN, the Washington Examiner, the New York Times. 2 years later, and about $30 million in, here's a quick summary of what you've got. You ready? Then Acting Attorney General Rod Rosenstein appointed Robert Mueller to serve as a special counsel to, and I think this is important to remember, the exact language from Special Order 3915-2017. Mueller was to provide a full and thorough investigation of the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. Investigate the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. The word collusion does not appear in the Justice Department's directions to Mueller. 674 days later, the Mueller team in Southern District of New York have obtained 7 guilty pleas. On the president's election team, campaign manager Paul Manafort was convicted of financial fraud and conspiracy charges. Foreign policy advisor and Chicago's very own George Papadopoulos pleaded guilty about lying to the FBI. The president's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty about lying to Congress. Former national security advisor Michael Flynn pleaded guilty about lying to the FBI. Advisor and friend Roger Stone has been indicted on lying to Congress about WikiLeaks. Richard Gates, the deputy Trump campaign chair, pleaded guilty to lying to investigators into the FBI. 3 Russian companies, 27 other individuals were indicted or charged. 25 of them were Russian nationals, and 12 of those were Russian intelligence who were charged with hacking into the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign. From the New York Times, all told, Mr. Trump and more than a dozen of his associates had more than 100 contacts with Russian nationals and WikiLeaks, their intermediaries during the campaign or the transition. Over the course of the investigation, around 500 pages and accounts have been dropped from Facebook and Instagram. Twitter has similarly dropped 400 accounts. All this came at a cost of around $1.5 million a month. Remember that the Ken Starr investigation went much longer than this one and cost $10 million more. The Wall Street Journal says a number to watch for is the value of the assets Paul Manafort forfeits. As a part of his plea agreement, he will give up his real estate, cash, and other holdings. The value of those could be greater than the entire cost of the Mueller investigation. It is impossible to not conclude that the Russians engaged in a high-level coordinated interference campaign in the 2016 presidential election. While people in the president's orbit committed crimes, Mueller's team did not charge the president or anyone in his family. The New York Times immediately gave props in an editorial they posted last night to the president for, despite his protestations, not interfering with the investigation, of not having Mueller removed. The president never sat for an interview before investigators, and the questions he answered in writing only concerned his time as a candidate, never as a president. He refused to answer questions about whether he tried to obstruct justice as a sitting president. The Washington Examiner, a paper friendly to the president, posted five things that did not happen. Mueller did not indict Trump or Jared Kushner, for instance. They did not charge anyone in the Trump circle with conspiring with Russia. They did not subpoena the president. The president did not fire Mueller. And they did not charge the president with interfering with the investigation. Not charged or indicted, by the way, also are the president's children, his son-in-law, Corey Lewandowski, Stephen Miller, Steve Bannon, Hope Hicks, Carter Page. All those people will appear in the movie when they make it, but none of them were indicted or charged. This weekend, the Attorney General, William Barr, is expected to tell the Congress what the principal conclusions are. Don's been reporting on that. The president and congressional leaders, in fact, the House by a 420-0 margin, have called for a full release of the report to the extent that it can be released. Don't know yet if that's going to happen. That's what everybody wants. Among the things we have not seen, which the Democrats and maybe you would like to see, the actual evidence that Mueller's team examined, including the president's written answers to those questions. Don't be surprised if the House asks Robert Mueller to testify before them. New York Times is also reminding us today that it ain't over. They wrote federal prosecutors in New York continue to investigate possible crimes related to campaign finance violations, the ones that ensnared Michael Cohen. So that's kind of where we are today. The president hasn't read the report. He'll never read it in its entirety. You imagine it's hundreds of pages. Your local congressman hasn't read it. It's not even sure if the attorney general has read it in its entirety yet. Once they have, then they'll make a report to Congress. And again, as Don said, we hope that happens this weekend. So that's where you are. It's 1022 on WGN. An informed opinion about this from a special guest in a minute. Renato Mariotti is a CNN legal analyst and a former federal prosecutor. You frequently hear him offering his expertise. Here on WGN Radio, he joins us again. Renato, it's John Williams. Thanks for your time this morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
What's your thought about the Mueller report? I presume you've read about as much of it as I have, which is none, but about the process and about what signals you're getting from the Justice Department, what are you thinking this morning?
Well, quite a bit. So first of all, there's definitely some aspects to this that are a little bit surprising. One is that there are still a lot of loose ends that remain unresolved. So Roger Stone, for example, is still under indictment. That case is going forward. Jerome Corsi, his associate, Mueller's team had presented him with some draft charges, and they said that they were going to charge him. He has not been charged at this time. There's a number of other matters that are ongoing. We know Rick Gates, the former deputy chairman of the president's campaign, is cooperating in several investigations, but we don't know what they are. So there's a lot that we don't know. That's still ongoing, and it is a bit surprising that the investigation is going to end now, or has ended now, despite these loose ends being out there. But I think what it suggests to me is that Mueller has interpreted his mandate very narrowly. He has been, tried to bring this to a close as quickly and efficiently as possible. I know you cited some of the figures a moment ago, comparing it to other investigations. And I think, we're all going to be interested to hear what the conclusions of the report are. I've been told by journalists that that is likely to happen later today. Then the next question would be, once we hear some of the broader conclusions that he reached, is that, I think everyone wants to know, will we see the report? Will we read the entire thing? Will we get to see some of the evidence? And the fact of the matter is that there are legal reasons why we may not see the entire report. At the moment, Attorney General Barr, I believe, plans to summarize the report to Congress and give a summary to the public. And I suspect there will be a lot of debate in the weeks to come about how much of the report can be released and whether or not the public can get the full report.
President has been strangely silent. He's golfing this morning, but he hasn't tweeted, which is by any measure unusual for him, particularly about this. I wonder, though, how happy the president should be. Remember, they said no more indictments or charges coming, maybe from the Southern District, but not from the Mueller investigation. How happy should the president be?
Well, if I was representing the president, I think I would be cautiously optimistic. I would be happy about, for example, that the Mueller investigation ended without Donald Trump Jr. or Jared Kushner being charged. I think those are, you know, very big deals for the Trump camp. I think it's a very good thing. They both were, I think, legitimately concerned about potential liability. And they were certainly under investigation. So now, but we don't know. What we don't know is, what did Mueller conclude about the president? Sitting president can't be indicted under DOJ policy. So we don't know what Mueller's concluded one way or the other about the president. So I think before he declares victory, he doesn't want to declare victory and embrace the Mueller investigation until he knows exactly what Mueller has said.
Right.
For all we know, Mueller said he obstructed justice or something. So we have to be careful, in wait and see one way or the other about how Mueller came out. And I think that the president's lawyers on his side of things are also being careful.
One last thing about that. I'll give you my take on it. Give me yours, and then I'll let you go. But that is, I caution all of us not to pit this as Mueller against Trump. The charge was for Robert Mueller to investigate Russian interference in the election. Well, I think they did a very thorough and helpful job to the American people. They turned in a report. We've seen the evidence along the way that Russia interfered. This was a good use of our time and our tax dollars. And if the president comes off unscathed, it was never supposed to be a witch hunt. So the president can claim victory if he likes, but what I feel good about is the fact that we discovered all of the things that we did.
Oh, I could not agree with you more. One thing that is very frustrating to me is that, first of all, as somebody who spent many years in the Justice Department, this has turned into an attack, like, hey, the Justice Department is against the president or something like that. This is a bunch of people who've been spending their lives, much of their lives in law enforcement, investigating the law, investigating also, and from a counterintelligence perspective, what adversaries of our country were doing, like you said, to undermine and attack our elections and our electoral process. So to me, that is a victory for Americans, regardless of the outcome, first of all. And secondly, I think it's important to note there's been all that you see a lot of times in the news, including on the network that I appear, at times people talking about collusion or, this or that. Really, what the purpose of this investigation was to determine what links there were between the Russian government and various Americans, including the Trump campaign, which is a counterintelligence mission, and then to investigate various, criminal activity, very discreet sets of criminal activity, and there have been charges that have been brought against certain individuals for criminal activity, which is good because we want law enforcement to do its job when there are crimes. So, to me, it's a success for America, no matter what the conclusions are. I agree with you on that.
Renato Mariotti is a CNN legal analyst. You'll see him there, former federal prosecutor here. Nice to talk to you, Renato. I know you're a great guest for Roe. I appreciate you coming on with us this morning, too.
Thank you. Have a good one.
It's 10:30. We'll pause here. A little late, but that's why. Maybe like Mary Schmeek said in the Tribune, we mentioned this in the last half hour. Yeah, it's colder than you want, but the sun is shining. You know it is going to get warm, so let's just start to act a little bit like it. Notice that the leaves are about to bud. Notice that your windows are dirty and it's time to wash them anyway, etc. Put away your winter coat. Stuff like that.
Right. Spring comes from within.
What, almost. Lighter coat, lighter mind? What was it?
Oh yeah, there were
right.
Some really one
light heart. Yeah.
Are you making fun of the delightful sayings that I was quoting?
I'm not no. Making fun of it, but
repeating.
It's a little bold. Like my world is going to be that much better just because I clean my windows.
Spring does come from within, Joe Brand. A lighter coat, lighter heart, a clearer window, a better view. Come on, Joe. This is not like you. What's the matter over there?
I'm sorry. You're right.
He got too much shade from that breakfast casserole. He's just down. He's negative.
It's 10:41. The Mincing Rascals is a podcast we record on Thursdays. We dropped a new episode Thursday afternoon around 5. It's a bunch of journalists and talk show hosts in town talking about local and national news. It was judged by the Headliners Club to be the best podcast in the city of Chicago. A bit from the latest episode normally comes your way after 11 o'clock. We'll play that in about 15 minutes here. Make it about 10 minutes here, because in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to go to Arizona. I want to just give a few more minutes, one last time than this morning, to the conversation of the Mueller report, which was dropped, but you and I haven't had a chance to read it yet. And that happened yesterday afternoon, just before the close of business at 5. Bob Mylan is a former prosecutor here in Chicago. And I asked Bob to give us some of his thoughts on the process or where that is, as we did with Renato Mariotti a little while ago. Hey, Bob, it's John, and you're on WGN. How are you this morning?
Good, John. Happy to join you today.
I appreciate your time. I presume you haven't had a chance to eyeball any of the exact words in it, but I wonder what your thought about the process has been and where we are right now.
Yeah, no, they haven't let me peek at it yet. But for those of us who work in this world, you know, serve as special prosecutors or conduct large investigations, nothing this large, this is a massive investigation. But for those of us, we're really looking forward to reading just what Mr. Mueller did. You know, he has a great reputation. He's been around forever. He's conducted, you know, very sensitive investigations throughout his career. So for those of us who do this, I'm personally looking forward to reading it to see how he did what he did, what tools he used, and the logic behind reaching agreements with some of the cooperators. So those are my, you know, for my own selfish reasons, I can't wait to read the report. The next thing that I really want to look at is the cooperators, because what we're hearing is that there's no further indictments coming from the Mueller group. However, there's a number of cooperators hanging out there, which begs the question, you know, what were they cooperating about? And, you know, if you look at Michael Flynn, the former national security advisor, you know, I really want to know what kind of information he provided the Mueller investigators. You look at Rick Gates, who was very, very close with Manafort, you know, a campaign aide, and pled guilty for lying regarding illegal foreign lobbying. I'd really like to know what deal they cut with Gates and what they were getting out of them, most of all.
Yeah.
And Cohn, you know, the same thing. Cohn's a problem, though, because he has major credibility issues, but certainly we want to know. And he's already testified a couple times. So those are the kind of questions that I'm looking for the answers for.
Yeah, we haven't heard the last from Roger Stone, for that matter, either. But, you know, you're referring to two different things there. One is the report. One is the evidence that informed the report. I think a lot of us would be happy if we just got a chance to read an in-depth, even summary of the thing. I expect that will happen. Some of it will have to be redacted. But you'd like to see the underlying evidence. You want to see Trump's answers to questions, for instance, right?
Of course, and I think we're going to see it. To your point, some of it will be redacted for security reasons, but Attorney General Barr is on record, and I believe him, is saying he's going to be very transparent, which means I think we're probably going to see, you know, 80% of this report in one way or the other. I'm confident of that.
I'll ask you the question I asked Renato a moment ago, and that is, if you were advising the president, how happy or cautious would you advise him to be today?
Well, there's two ways to look at this. There's the legal way, which is the behind the doors when you're advising somebody, and my advice would be cautious. This is, you know, everybody who thinks that people in the White House are high-fiving each other and happy now because there's no further indictments coming down. Well, of course they're happy, but the devil's in the details. And this report could be very damaging for the president. We just don't know. We have absolutely no idea. So the best advice, legal advice that I'd give the president or anybody in the White House is to be very cautious and keep holding your breath. Now, the other side is the political side. And, of course, both sides are going to spin this thing. The Trump White House is going to spin it as a win, and everything he's been saying that this whole thing has been made up and it was a witch hunt, they're going to run with that. The other side is going to wait for this thing to come out, and any negative connotations in that report about the president or his confidence in the White House, they're going to run with. So there's two ways to look at this.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you one last question. Is there anything that you think that Mueller did wrong? I mean, Renato and I were talking a little while ago about the fact that this was an investigation into Russian interference done by career servants to the United States who did their best to see what they could find. And Lordy, they found a treasure trove of interference from the Russians. Was there anything that you think in detail that we know about the Mueller investigation that should not have happened? What did they do wrong?
Nothing that we know yet. I mean, you're not going to know that until you read the report. But it's not just the issue isn't just whether the Russians interfered. I think that's been proven. The issue is, was there any coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the Trump campaign?
And we don't have that. And we don't have that, do we? I mean, so far, you
right.
and I have not read that.
That was Mueller's marching orders. Was there any coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the Trump campaign that impacted the campaign and any related matters? And so we do know that we know as a fact from the pleas of guilty and things of that nature that Russian individuals and interfered with the campaign. What we don't know is was there any coordination with them and individuals associated with the Trump campaign that resulted in that? So that's the million-dollar question, and that's what we're going to be looking to see in the report. So to answer your question, there's no way anybody could criticize Mueller at this point without reading the report.
Bob Mylan's a former prosecutor. You've heard him here before, and we'll call on him again. Bob, thanks for your time again this morning. We sure appreciate it.
Always good talking to you, John.
1048, WGN, a snippet of the Mincing Rascals award-winning podcast. Update on the NCAA brackets and the news. Plus, our friends from WGN Radio, Rokan, Steve Cochran. Don't tell him I stumbled on his name. Dave Ennett and Kevin Powell are in Arizona, and we'll catch up with them in the 11 o'clock. Joe, I try not to root against people, but how many people do you think were like me last night rooting for North Dakota State?
Oh, I'm sure just about everybody other than
every
Duke
man,
fans.
Woman, and child in the United States, plus some Russian nationals, with the exception of Duke Nation.
Well, how about Virginia yesterday?
Oh, my gosh.
Calling it close once again.
You know, Virginia, technically, that counts as a loss, Virginia. The fact that, and evidently that wasn't a terrible team. They were playing Gardner, Webb, or whatever it was.
Correct.
Those kids evidently could play decent ball to play even with Virginia for a half. The same with the Duke game. Those kids actually are pretty good. Second half, we discovered what the difference was. But
right.
to run even with those 2-1 seeds for a full half is kind of an accomplishment unto itself. And when you saw that Virginia score play out yesterday in through the second half, you go, it's going to happen again!
That's why you got to credit those players, because how is that not running through their heads during that entire first half and into the locker room?
Virginia kids, yeah.
Yeah, they came out firing, though.
Yeah, yeah. Props to Bradley and Peoria, too, for giving Michigan State all they could handle. That was kind of a fun game as well.
That was a good game.
You know what the best part of being an adult is? You don't have to wait for the bunny to bring you Anderson's Candy Shop's marshmallow eggs. You can hop over and treat yourself anytime. Crispy Nests, chocolate bunnies, marshmallow eggs are all back. Those sweet, fluffy, chocolate-covered miracles, the ones you wait for all year long. Each marshmallow egg is made from scratch and hand-dipped in Anderson's famous milk or dark chocolate. The result is the most fluffy, melt-in-your-mouth delicious marshmallow egg you'll ever have. Anderson's is located on Main Street in downtown Richmond and Barrington. Plus, while you're in the shop, you can sample Anderson's other triumphs, like cream-filled eggs and flavors like maple nut. I love that one. Peanut butter and marzipan. Don't wait for the bunny. Call Anderson's. You're an adult. 888-214-7614. And have your candy shipped today. 888-214-7614. Or AndersonsCandyShop.com. No matter how you justify it. To find out what the bunny already knows, nothing beats these treats. The Mincing Rascals is that podcast we record on Thursdays and we drop it. I recommend you listen to it. I encourage you to do so and share it with your friends. Eric Zorn, the columnist at the Tribune, Scott Stantis, the Tribune's editorial cartoonist, Patty Vasquez and I were sitting in the studio on Thursday, and we were talking about the national scene. Eventually, we segued, though, to the mayoral race in Chicago.
Completely, they don't like it.
They are
move.
Irrelevant.
They can move.
Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah,
the
mayor's
ranchers.
The Chicago mayor's race is not
over.
Changing,
it's over.
Is it?
Okay.
This is amazing.
Can someone explain to me the periwinkle move of pulling all of her ads?
She's done. I think she. I just.
Do you really think that's it?
I think unless there's.
Wait
some,
a minute. She pulled her ads.
She pulled her ads.
She pulled her TV ads.
There's a debate Thursday night, flying in the face of John Williams' reason to vote for someone. He likes the ads.
Perfect.
There was a debate Wednesday night, and it was basically these debates are like dueling press conferences, and this one was particularly dull because they would bring up someone to ask a question about some issue, like, what are you gonna do about crime? And then Lightfoot would recite points from her website's issue page, and Preckwinkle would respond with points from her website's issue page, and there was very little interaction. Preckwinkle's trying to go a little negative, saying, I'm experienced, you're not experienced. And this very telling moment, this only interesting moment in the entire debate, was when they had a chance to ask each other questions. Anyone see this, or am I the only one?
You're the only one. I promise you, you're the only one.
Well, this is good. You'll like this story. So Preckwinkle goes first, and she asks Lightfoot, she says, what budgets have you, what's the size, biggest budget you've ever balanced? Basically, what have you ever done?
Right.
You know, and Lightfoot, you know, comes back with, well, I've managed this department and that department, and more importantly, I have blah, blah, blah. And then it becomes Lightfoot's turn, and she throws an Ephus pitch, which is, you know, a big lob pitch to Preckwinkle. She says, the next mayor of Chicago is going to be an African-American woman. Tell me what that means to you. I mean, great question. We can all hold hands, sing kumbaya, great moment to go positive.
Oh,
so
boy.
What does Toni Preckwinkle do? No, yes, she does. She like she basically says, well, it's not a question. It's a historic moment, but I've got the experience, and I've been running things, and I've been a progressive.
What she has,
and
she has
you've
said.
Been an attorney for big business, for big pharma. For you know, she's like, goes
wait a minute, what did she? What
it should
she,
be the, how just, far we've come. I mean,
just
like,
said, oh, totally. Yeah. Well, then, it's Lightfoot's rebuttal, and she gives exactly the answer you're talking about. Like, it's an inspiration to children and people everywhere. That their, you know, their barriers have been knocked down. And Lightfoot's people, I imagine, were just in the back room just high-fiving each other. Like, unbelievable. It was such a trap.
And Preckwinkle missed that pitch.
She missed that. She totally swung and missed at it. And that was the moment of the debate.
Maybe she was trying to take the high road. You know, I'm not going to play the race or gender card. I've been in the game long enough. I'm a known commodity, and I'm a safe bet that way. Almost as if she didn't need it, right?
Well, she caught such holy hell for the first debate in the dog whistle she blew with, you know, what do you like about Lightfoot?
Well, she also,
you know, she's gay. Gay is gay gets.
Hey, imagine that. Picture that. and also she caught hell for, on the night of the general election, when she came in the top two, her victory speech contained digs at Lightfoot, which is not the moment for digs. And so she's just not good at this.
So I mean, is she running? Is she stopped running?
I think she stopped running. That's
why
is
she up at the debates then?
No, she's still, I think... I mean, the thing is, you don't stop running. You run through the tape and you're a candidate because you never know.
Rauner ran to the end.
Yeah.
that was a known.
He didn't even want to.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Right. So you never know. Someone may come out.
That's the Mincing Rascals, and we do about 30, 40 minutes of that every Thursday. So we were obviously tackling the mayoral race there. We talked about the graduated taxes that Illinois is going to lay on you, plus some national scenes. We usually spend some time in Trump land, and we did go there this week as well. The Mincing Rascals, wherever you listen to finer podcasts. It's 10:57. Thank you, Don. 11:12 on WGN. This is John. Normally we do the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast here, but today we go to Arizona. Get a load of this. Steve Cochran and Ro Khan are in the, I believe, minor league broadcast booth, the spring training broadcast booth for the White Sox in Arizona. Am I right about that, guys?
That is correct, except it's me and Dave Hennett at the moment because Kevin Powell and Kevin Powell is trying to find Steve Cochran. That's exactly what's going on.
Steve is orbiting the ballpark.
Somewhere, somebody just made $100. I just want to say that. How's the weather out there, guys?
Oh, it is spectacular.
I haven't been to that facility in 15, 20 years. What's it like?
Well, let's talk about this, Dave, because this is a new facility, right, that they share with the LA Dodgers.
It is, and the two teams share it. The Dodgers are on one side out beyond left field, and the White Sox are beyond the first base side for their facility, and then they share the ballpark. So today, the Dodgers are playing the White Sox, but the Dodgers are the home team. And then tomorrow the White Sox will play in the same ballpark as the home team against Cleveland. Yeah. But it's a great new facility, a shared facility, just like some of the other newer spring training facilities around here. It's just, I think this game is sold out today from what I saw driving in.
It's beautiful. You know, that's the thing about all these spring training facilities, whether it's Florida or here in Arizona. They've spent so much money. When the World Series, and then they built down in Fort Myers, they built this, they rebuilt Fenway in Fort Myers, Florida. You know, like a one-third size model of it with a green monster and all that. And you're like, as soon as they did that, everybody's game had to go like, all right, now what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And the Cubs, obviously, Sloan Park. And then this is absolutely beautiful. And, you know, there's nothing quite like walking. You know, we've had a rough winter. I think we can all agree.
It's 37 degrees. It's 37 here right now.
Right. It sucks. It's 70.9 here right now. Yeah. I don't want to say 71. I don't want to make you feel bad. Looking at a beautiful green baseball field changes everything. And the Doesn't season starts on Thursday.
Yeah. So we will all be the following Thursday at Cork and Kerry again for the Sox home opener. Is Kansas City an outdoor park or an indoor facility? That's outdoors, right?
Yeah. Outdoor, Kauffman mm-hmm. Stadium, yep.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
So what's the
Mr.
guess?
Steve Cochran has stepped in.
I swear to God, I could get lost in my own closet. I drove up and down Camelback Road.
Don't you hate that?
My GPS said, park on the left, park on the left. I keep looking to the left. I called Kevin like 3 times. I go, there's no park here. This isn't funny, fellas. There's no park here. It literally was on the right side. If I had turned my head to the right, you could see the park. I drove up and down Camelback like 5 different times.
I've started to discipline myself, Steve, when I drive around Chicago to, like, not, like, turn off all my GPS stuff and just go, John, you can do this. You know, you have to get to a restaurant. You know where it is. Just trust that you can do
it. Right. We somehow managed for the first 40, what, years of our lives?
GPS makes us stupid. You drove right by the place, huh?
I never looked right. When I finally parked, the GPS went, I can't believe how stupid you are.
I would like to point something out, Steve, though, is that this is a baseball stadium. It's kind of hard to miss it.
Oh, no, Kate, listen, I swear to you, if I had looked right, there's everything you've ever seen in a baseball stadium. There's parking lots, there's
walls,
giant light stanchions, there's people. I'm looking on the left going, there's nothing but houses. Unless we're playing wiffle ball in the backyard, we're not getting there.
Yeah. I think there are some teams that might be this year.
I shouldn't be let out of the
house. Why are you guys out there anyway? What the hell's going on here?
Oh, it's a scam to play golf.
Yeah.
Oh, are you going to golf after this morning?
No. We're going back and we're charting the rest of the season. Steve and I are in we're doing game by game pitching matchups.
We're also going through all of Chicago media trying to help him pronounce Eloy Jimenez to make sure that's not screwed up.
Well, so Joe was doing the number on that, and I knew that was a nice contract. But we're also jaded, I think, by $300 million deals. I heard what Jimenez was getting. And I said, that's not that much, but what is that? The largest? Do that number again, Joe.
$43 million contract guaranteed. It's worth up to 75, but it's the largest contract for a player that has not had major league time yet.
Just the largest ever given to somebody who hasn't had an at-bat in the show.
Or as Mike Trout calls it, walking around money.
That kind of got buried. We all got lost our minds about Bryce Harper and all of that stuff, and Machado, and then lo and behold, Trout blows that thing out of the water.
Bryce Harper was the number one highest paid player in baseball history for what, about 15 minutes?
Exactly, because what is it, 430? 430, I think, is the new number
Trout,
to beat.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's got to stay there till he's 80, though.
Yeah.
Did you see that? It's like
literally, he can't go home.
Right.
He's got to stay at the park till he's 80.
Yeah, he'll be the towel boy in 2040.
And he's got to name his first child Angel.
I would. Mm-hmm. I'd make that deal. So what are you guys thinking, Steve, Rowe, guys? What's your feel for the Sox this year?
I think this Eloy Jimenez thing is huge, because the one thing that I think Sox fans have been really disappointed by, right, was that there was not a major acquisition in the offseason. There was such expectation with Machado. They hired, I mean, his mom got a contract to be the shortstop. I mean, it was like they did everything they could possibly do to try to lure him in.
And there's literally, as Roe was saying, there's more of a reason to come to the park. More people need to come to the park. We've beat this dead horse forever. But now you got a reason to come out and see one of the future stars for the Sox.
Right.
And, you know, who knows what he's going to do this year. He could tear it up and be the greatest rookie in the history
of baseball. He's not having a great spring, I don't think. But I guess
I told him when I was driving around, you're a huge disappointment to all of us.
Are you sure him?
Yeah, I think it was 246 is what he's so far this spring. But, you know, he had a crazy end of the season in AAA Charlotte. that where they literally, the opposing teams were putting four outfielders in.
Right.
Because they couldn't figure out. He would always hit to a place where no one was. And they're like, well, we got to just put another guy out there. And eventually they're just, it's going to be like batting practice, where it's just, they're going to put a bunch of 14-year-olds out in the outfield.
Well, spring training may confuse him too, because as you know, when you get pulled from a game in spring training, the guys generally will run the warning track. They do wind sprints and stuff in the running track. So he may have looked up and went, all right, this isn't fair. There's seven outfielders now. There's eight outfielders.
Give me a number, though. I did this with the guys earlier, and Don Kleppen said, I believe his number was 37. How many wins do the Sox pick up this year, Steve?
I think they had a shot at 500.
I was going 81. How about you, Roe?
Well, I'm going to have to go higher then, because I you know, I
what are you going, 82 to block?
Yes, I'm going to go with 82. 80.5 wins. You know, it is. You know, you hope that they're a 500 team. I think that's the trajectory that they would like to be on. And I think that was the expectation of trajectory if they were to sign a major star, because they need to now start to build this coalescence. You know, there are a couple other guys here, too. You know, Dylan Cease is another name that you're going to be hearing a lot of this season. Mm-hmm. And to me, the kid that I cannot wait to see is Luis Robert, who is, you know, a lot of people are comparing him to some of the greats in baseball. And
Five-tool player?
He's a six-tool player.
Six-tool?
Yes.
Wow.
We don't even know what that six-tool is.
I do. Well, it's a mystery. It's the ability to find the ballpark is the six-tool.
Right. I'm going to ride with him.
I've been called a six-tool, but that was totally different situation. So he's just one of those guys that when we saw him at Sox Fest, he is gigantic now.
Massive.
He was, you know, when he came, he was like a string bean, a pole.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, whatever they've been having him on, he's just amazingly, and he's going to be another monster. And they do have this amazing young core. And it's funny because now you're watching a team, hate to bring them up, like the Padres, who have this amazing farm system.
Right.
And they're about 2 years behind, except they got Machado. Mm-hmm. 2 years behind where the Sox were. So you're going to see. And I think you're going to eventually see the Sox and the Padres in the World Series.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Are you guys above the fray of wishing ill on the Bryce Harpers and the San Diego Padres and the teams?
No, I'm not that good a person.
Well, I'm glad to hear. I mean, I'm like, there's just something about me that says, really? $300-400 million? Fine, you can have them. I don't want them anyway. That's where my head is right now.
Oh, yeah, once they're gone, they're dead to us.
I am not above the fray of hating everything that Philadelphia has ever produced.
The entire city?
Yes. I mean,
have you had a cheesesteak?
I have. I've had a cheesesteak. I have family from Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure I like them.
It's the cradle of America.
You're the guy that cracked the Liberty Bell?
Yeah, how about that?
So I hate the Eagles.
Uh-huh.
I hate the Flyers. Forget about it. Uh-huh. Don't even get me started about it. And then the stupid mascot they've got. Mm-hmm. I have always hated the Phillies.
You hate Will Smith?
Okay. If I have to, if I just to keep this bit alive, yes, then I'm going to say.
What about the Sixers? You hate the Sixers?
I actually don't hate the Sixers. That's the only organization that I don't hate.
Now, the Sixers are interesting, and you guys can back me up on this. They were the original tank team.
Yes, that's right.
The Sixers, before the Cubs did this, they tanked. They went completely in the basement, charging the fans full ticket prices for a team that couldn't beat high schoolers. And then the Cubs picked it up and ran it into the ground. And
yes.
Whatever happened to the Cubs? Did they work out all right?
We'll see. That's the other piece of this equation, too, you know, for Chicago baseball fans, especially for Cubs fans. The championship window is closing.
I agree with that. I would argue, and you guys, I don't know how you feel about this, but I would argue that the Cubs have more pressure on them than the White Sox by far.
Oh, for sure.
They've got to win this year.
Well, what was that really Pecota number? I mean, I don't even know what that was. I just saw Pecota, and then it had the Cubs at about a 500 team, and I thought, how is that possible? That struck me as being really pessimistic about the Cubs season.
Well, I think Chris Bryant, if he comes back healthy and energized and realize, I mean, he's going to have to basically carry the team, and that's really going to be, or pick up his end of it, just saying.
And the NL Central, the NL Central is going to be a dogfight this year. I mean, every team has
Cardinals
gotten better. Yeah, and Cardinals just extended Paul Goldschmidt, too, so he's not going anywhere for a while. It's going to be a dogfight for a couple of years now.
It's fun to have the Brewers so close, though. I mean, you know, once upon a time, playing Milwaukee wasn't that much fun, wasn't that interesting.
No.
It was just
well, they were
a place
the White
for Cubs
Sox
fans to go. They
rivals.
Were. And now that's going to be fun. Those are going to be fun games, that's for sure.
Did you guys see the Sports Illustrated post this week? It was every Major League Baseball team in six words. And my favorite was the Pittsburgh Pirates. They were described as the baseball equivalent of beige wallpaper.
Do you remember what they said about Joe? You'll have to look this up. What were the six words for the Cubs and the White Sox?
The Cubs were have to win now. Some formation of that in the and the White Sox. You know, I don't remember.
Harper
may have been Steve will never find the park. That's six words.
It says no Harper or Machado. Now what? Question mark. That's
there you go.
Oh, that's somebody not doing their work. Come on, we can do better than that. 312-981-7200. Six words to describe the White Sox. Whoever gives me the best six words will win a Steve Cochran's hat. What are you wearing a hat right now, Steve?
How about this? How about when I come back to town, I'll drive them around. See where we end up.
It'll drive you home one night, and you'll get home 3 weeks later.
We're out of time. Nice to hear you, boys. We can hear the birds chirping in the background. By the
way, hey, who's coming up? Who's coming up on the John Williams Show?
Well, Dave Ennett, our sports director and Hall of Famer, and also one rookie Kevin Powell will be joining us as well. So we'll visit with the guys more from Arizona after the news. Good to hear you, boys. Nice to talk to you. That's, of course, Rokan and Steve Cochran, who took some friends from here out there. The news is coming up on WGN.
Bill and Wendy.
Which invention had the biggest impact on humanity?
Electricity.
That was a big one.
Printing press?
Also on here. The wheel. The most amazing thing about the wheel isn't so much its invention, but that people relied on dragging things around for so long. That was the only way to, or horses, or ducks. They tried ducks for a while. That wasn't effective.
Weekday mornings at 10.
I don't know why my head and my vision went right to a caveman dragging a woman by the hair.
Yeah, you're going to bring a cavewoman back to your cave. You had to drag. It was sad.
Couldn't give her a ride.
No. Horrible time that was.
With the bonus hour online and on your app at noon from WGN Radio.
You don't have to miss out on the things you love because of hip pain, especially when you can feel new in no time. Eliminating hip pain has never been easier than a visit to Dr. Sean W. Palmer at the Hip and Knee Center. You see, Dr. Palmer's performed over 3,000 anterior hip replacements, so the anterior approach procedure may be new to many, but it's routine to Dr. Palmer. Patients come from all around the world for his expertise. Men and women of all ages, sizes, and activity levels can benefit from an outpatient anterior hip replacement that requires no general anesthesia and no restrictions on activity. Recovery is measured in days to weeks, not months. Take a shower when you get home. Sleep in your own bed, and then start planning all the things you've been missing out on doing. So if the pain is too much and you want to feel new in no time, make the call. 1-866-FEEL-NEW. That's 1-866-FEEL-NEW. Or learn more at thehipandkneecenter.com.
Grandma Elizabeth, tell me the story of the 60-Minute Men.
I'd love to, Colin. It was a cold and bitter night, and I woke up to a freezing house and broken furnace. I called American Weathermakers, and your grandfather was at my house in 60 minutes. I loved the company so much, I married your grandfather. Dick, can you add to the story about our family business?
Colin, at American Weathermakers, we're the 60-Minute Men. When a customer has no heat, we promise to be there in 60 minutes or give them a free $60 gift card for repairs. We never charge for travel or overtime, and we offer a lifetime warranty on our repairs.
And American Weathermakers has the best prices on the major brands of furnaces every day.
That's my favorite story. I want to be one of the 60-Minute Men, too.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
Call toll-free.
855-955-HVAC.
For details and more of the story, visit AmericanWeathermakers.com or call us at 855-955-HVAC.
I'm a real person, real voice, and a real face. Even though you can't see it because, you know, radio invisibility. You know what else is super duper real? Geico local offices. A Geico local agent could tailor fit a policy to you, which could save you hundreds on your car insurance. All because Geico local agents keep it real, with real savings and real service. Really?
And there's more. A Geico local agent could help you with more than just auto policies, like motorcycle, boat, and RV insurance. Stop by or give them a call today.
Washing my nose, oh yeah.
I'm a shower curtain, and I do one thing. Keep water from leaking everywhere. So you see why I feel useless compared to Geico, who does so much more. Like, not only could Geico save you money, but they've been around for over 75 years. And they give you 24/7 access online, over the phone, or on the Geico app. And they've got a 97% customer satisfaction rating. They do all this while I have to listen to this chucklehead. Oh, good, he stopped.
Washing my toes!
Oh, great, an encore.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Joe, I'll expect you to do this too, Don, as well. Six words that describe the Chicago White Sox. Mine so far is 600 million. We don't need no 600 million. Technically, that's not six words, but anyway, that's what I've come up with. Joe, Don, I'll expect your full report after 6 o'clock or after the 11:30 news here. 600 million. We don't need no 6. You understand what I'm saying there, right? That makes sense? Does that resonate with the White Sox fans?
Yeah, they didn't need to spend $600 million this offseason.
To get those two players.
Right, got right. It.
Okay, fine. Hey, good one, John. Lightfoot versus Preckwinkle for Chicago mayor. Before you vote, watch the 2019 Chicago mayoral debate on WGN TV. Monday at 7, we'll give you a Malnati's Pizza, one of those American Weathermakers weather stations. They like those, I like those, you like those. We'll give you one, whoever gives me the best six words that describe the Sox, text it to 312-981-7200. Not just back to John Williams. Thank you, Don Kleppen. John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio as we spend a little time this hour. The last weekend, the White Sox are in Arizona getting ready for Thursday's home opener. The White Sox start playing ball like everybody else on Thursday. The following Thursday, they'll be at home in Chicago. We'll be at Cork and Carry across from the park. That'll be fun. Getting ready for all of that, our sports director, Dave Bennett, Kevin Powell, who does the sports on WGN Radio and in the afternoon, and a special guest joining them in the box. Hi, boys. How are you?
We're doing great, John. It is a beautiful morning, as you heard from Stephen Rowe a few minutes ago. And the White Sox are going to play the Dodgers here at Camelback Ranch later on today. But the big news here this morning, of course, was the official proclamation announcement signing of Eloy Jimenez to his new contract with the White Sox, and a news conference held a little while ago, and all smiles for Jimenez, Rick Hahn, the general manager, the Jimenez family, and everybody associated with the team. They're very happy to see this day arrive.
Yeah, it was, well, first of all, great timing by us, Dave. We had planned this trip for a while. Yep. It just happened to be an Eloy Jimenez press conference this morning. This is the richest contract ever for a player who's never stepped into a major league, a big league batter's box before. That's how much confidence the White Sox have in this guy. And, look, Rich King has been here every single day. I've talked to a bunch of people within the Sox system, reporters, people around baseball. I haven't heard really a negative thing about him. He's had a slow spring, but we talked to him because apparently this negotiations have been going on since the general manager's meetings, so it's been going on for months now. He said that it kind of did add some pressure over the past month or so here because he hasn't been all world like he was last year. But I think, you know, he says he feels relief now. He's a member of the Sox for at least the next year, 6 years and all the way up to about potentially 8 years.
Is Rich sitting over there right now?
He's there.
Rich
He's right
King,
here with
former
us.
WGN-TV star, and has been handling webcasts all year for the White Sox and all the games that we don't carry on WGN Radio. He's been broadcasting, and so he's been in camp throughout, John, and so I think he's got a pretty good perspective on this whole signing today, the news today, and also what is in store for this
team. Well, I'm glad you were there, Rich, because you know what I was looking at? I literally said to my producer this morning, I said, Ashley, what was the White Sox haven't had a great spring. And I know that doesn't mean a lot, but it means a little. They're like 8-17 or something. Tell me what you've seen that's good or troubling this spring.
Yeah, well, it is. The record's not good, but I'll tell you what. Spring training is 80% of what's last year. They value last year more than spring training. Numbers don't mean that much here in Arizona. The ball doesn't break as well from the pitchers. The ball carries well. It's a hitter's paradise out here. So you take that with a grain of salt sometimes. It's going to be interesting to see. I think the White Sox will hit, especially with Jimenez in there. I think he'll be in there, even though Rick Hahn will not commit to it today. I think he'll be there on opening day in Kansas City. And I think with him in the lineup and Yonder Alonso and Jose Abreu, Tim Anderson's had a great camp so far. Yonder Alonso is going the other way, hitting home runs to left. The thing about Eloy Jimenez, gentlemen, is that he can go to right field with power. He had two homers here last year in spring, and consecutive at-bats to right field. One homer so far this spring. As Kevin mentioned, he is struggling a bit at the plate. But if I said to people, Dave and Kevin, this guy doesn't make it, I'm way off base. This guy has all the tools. Yeah. He's an adequate outfielder and doesn't have great speed, but he can hit, and he's a bona fide, in my opinion, a bona fide star.
So what's
and that's
the,
why Rick
and what's the outfield going to look like then? Who do you who goes where in the outfield then?
Well, on opening day, this is great speculation. I think it's going to be Engel in center because they need a speedster out there to cover the ground.
He's done to watch last year.
Because Palka's no bargain.
Engel robbed another one this spring.
I know.
Is he still doing that stuff? He did it out here in the desert.
And if he's flanked by Palka on right and Jimenez on left.
A lot of power in your corner outfield.
Yeah, no speed, though. So Engel's essential out there. However, I will say this. A guy named Larry Garcia, who's maybe the fifth outfielder here, 8 for his last 11, including 2 home runs during the camp. He may, it's hard to keep him out of the lineup in Kansas City with that kind of number here. So you may send a Palky, you may see him out there. That's just my speculation. But the infield is set. Moncada's a great at third this year. His bat's been great. Henderson's had a great camp. Yomer, of course, is second, and Abreu or Alonso at first. And one guy that's really impressed me, gentlemen, is James McCann. They got him from Detroit. Mm-hmm. He's a take-charge guy, a bulldog guy. And he's taken charge of that locker room pretty well in his early going here. So lots to be optimistic about. And, you know, sometimes you look at spring training records and you get carried away. But let's hope that it comes down to pitching, the starting pitching. If that's good, the White Sox get off to a great start. They play 22 of their first 29 games against teams either rebuilding or in the process of beginning to rebuild. So if they can cash in early, it'll be a great thing.
Hey, the 2005 White Sox finished last in Cactus League play. So.
Nice. Thank you for that. By the way, maybe the most important thing we can learn talking to you guys today is how to say this guy's name. So it's Aloy or Eloy. Give me the first name.
I got it. Well, it's either way. I'll tell you what
Rich
happened.
Rich is fluent in Spanish, by the way.
He was showing off in the press conference.
Yeah, he's asking questions in Spanish. Yeah.
Oh, seriously?
He didn't understand the question. I think it's Aloy in Spanish. Aloy. Jimenez.
And then
in English, it's Eloy. Either way. I mean, the family goes.
He doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't
care.
Eloy.
That's what he told us.
I'll kind of blend them. Eloy. And then the last name, is it Jimenez or Jimenez?
Jimenez.
So I'm going to do soft H there. Aloy or Eloy Jimenez.
Jimenez.
Dave, then go ahead and say it.
Do we have just a moment here? Because Rich caught up with Rick Hahn, the GM, right after the news conference.
Who, by the way, is running up and down the stairs here at Campbellback Ranch, getting a real good workout in.
Getting his cardio in here this morning. But do we have a moment for this?
Here it is.
Well, it's a big moment. It's, again, a continuation of what we set out to do a few years ago when we began this rebuild, and that was identify potentially impactful core young players, acquire them, and then ultimately make sure they're in a White Sox uniform for an extended period of time. This not only gives us some cost certainty with Aloy, but extends the control that we have over him going forward. And once this team is ready to win and this group of young championship caliber players all comes together, it's going to be important to have them around as long as possible. And this contract today helps facilitate that.
I know a lot goes into this besides the numbers. The character of the guy, too, he's a real deal, isn't he?
No, it's a big part of it, too, is obviously the talent gets the most notoriety and is essential to a deal like this. But you're also betting on the man, on the human being and the character. And what Aloy's shown us over the time in this organization has reinforced everything our scouts said before we acquired him about work ethic and leadership ability and how important winning is to him. So that makes you feel just that much better about making this type of commitment.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it, Rick.
You bet, Rich.
Okay, so my takeaway from that was that he said Aloy, not Aloy. And not
that's right. Yeah.
That's really why we wanted you to hear that.
No, I love the sound of that. When I was talking to Stephen Rowe earlier, I said never before has a city so anticipated not the season upon them, but the season after the season upon them. But let's watch these kids get better this year, and then who knows what happens after that.
Well, it's a big moment, no question about it, because the Sox need a lift. They lost Kopech last year into the injury. He had a buzz going, right, guys?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, this year, the Machado thing, you're in the mix on that. Didn't get him and disappoint a lot of people. But Eloy is kind of the filler in there, and he's the guy that's going to excite some people. And, again, the offense will be there, I think. It comes down to whether Carlos Rodon can have a good year or whether Lopez looks great here in camp, and also Nova looked great the other day. So, you know,
Giolito can't have an ERA in the fives.
No, he's got to pick it up. His velocity's up, guys, but yeah. I don't know what's wrong. He's flattening out or whatever. He's getting ripped, but he's a fourth starter right now, and they might go with four to start the season. So it's you got to look at spring training. I've been through this so many times. I tell the Jim Fry story in 89, Dave and Kevin. The Cubs had a horrible camp. They had fights and everything. And they lost two or three to the Phillies on opening weekend. I saw Jim Fry walking out after covering the game. He looked at me and he says, Rich, this is going to be one struggling year. You know what happened?
Yeah,
they won the division, and Don Zimmer had a great year managing. So you never spring training, you never know. So let's hope. You always look at it optimistically and say it's going to be a good year. Get the excitement going and go from there.
You mentioned going with a four-man rotation initially, but when they go to five, Manny Bañuelos, who is an acquisition out of the Dodgers, right?
Right, he's a good guy,
and he was a former high draft pick, and. He's been battling there, and it kind of looks like they got Irvin Santana, who finally made a Cactus League start the other day.
Right.
How do you see that working?
Well, that's a great question. That is the question. Bañuelos will start in the bullpen, I think, as a left-hander with Caleb Frere and Jace Fry. I think Irvin Santana will get one more, maybe a minor league start or whatever, or some kind of simulated game. Looked good the other day in four innings. He figures in the mix, but it'll come down to Bañuelos and Irvin Santana. Dylan Covey's in the mix, too. He's a possible starter, but I think he'll wind up in the pen. Ryan Burr, another guy who's come on, who was up last year, had a great camp. He'll be on the team, I think. So, all in all, the Sox bullpen looks pretty good shape, guys.
All right, so let's do this. When we were visiting with Roe and Steve earlier, Steve mentioned that Sports Illustrated summarized each team in six words. What are the six words that describe the White Sox? Now, this isn't fair to put you guys on the spot, but I'm going to. We asked our listeners text in six words to describe the White Sox. A lot of you said things like, some of them, here's 847, this team is bound for glory. A lot of you had versions of we don't need no stinking Harper, stinking Machado, stinking Stars, hungry and chemistry, team of destiny. A lot of you are looking forward, which I think is really the thrust of where this team realistically is. Kevin Powell, six words to describe the White Sox. Go.
They have to make progress this year. I combined them.
That's terrific. Boy, that's a bumper sticker if I ever heard one. Thank you, Kevin. Dave Bennett, Rich, any six-word summaries?
Pitching must be good.
Pitching must be good. You get two more to burn. Or is that so beautiful?
For success. For success.
There we go.
How's that? Pitching must be good for success.
The bar's kind of low there, Dave Bennett. You want to play or are we done now?
Get off to a fast start.
Thank you. Yeah. I think that was first 29 games. That was an interesting stat you guys brought up.
Yeah, I think that's a great stat. And look, especially with a young team, and we've seen this before, and you mentioned. You know, 89, there were some veterans on that team you were alluding to. But when you have a young team and they get some early success, and I know that Sox fans will be quick to point out, what was it, 3 years ago they were 23-10 out of the gate, and then things kind of fell apart for them. But guys get confident. It tends to breed success from some early wins. You get going a little bit. The other teams in the division suddenly start looking at you and say, hey, maybe these guys aren't so bad.
Look at it this way. You got a tough out at third base in Moncada, who's having a great spring. You got a tough out at shortstop in Anderson, having a great spring. You got Yonder Alonso. You've got Abreu. Now you got Jimenez. You've got some real good bats in there. And not to mention guys like Larry Garcia. That's what I'm saying. The offense, I think, will be there. Comes down to whether Carlos Rodon can have a good year, basically.
You mentioned Yoan Moncada. He's key to me because, remember, this whole rebuild got going with the trade of Chris Sale, and Yoan Moncada was the centerpiece they got back in that deal. Not great last year. This is a
key.
He's got all the tools to be great.
You guys are getting played off.
I hear that. Thanks, John.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Rich, nice to hear your voice on the radio, John, man. Good job.
Oh, glad to be back on. Love it.
Amen to that. And Dave and Kevin, you guys sound like you're having fun. Thanks for giving us some of your time.
Thanks, Johnny.
Thank you, John. See you.
11:52 on WGN. All right, so who gets the prize for the best six-word description for the team? Plus a preview of what's coming up with Amy Guth. All coming your way on WGN. Earlier, we read from Mary Schmeek's column in the Chicago Tribune where she listed nice things even on a cool spring for us to think about, and one of them was a poem called The Trees. No one else can. Joe Brand poo-pooed that, but I don't think Joe knows the poem. Joe, the trees are coming into leaf like something almost being said. Last year is dead, they seem to say. Begin afresh, afresh, afresh. Eh? Joe?
See, I don't want you to put me off as insensitive.
That's
because
what I was doing.
You play that music in the background, you ease the tone of your voice, and okay, I can get behind that. But it was a little bold to tell me that I'm going to have a better life if I clean my windows. That's basically all I was trying to say.
And ditch your bulky winter coat and have a brighter, fresher outlook.
I wore my bulky coat today, and I felt nice because I could just leave it unzipped and walk and let the breeze just flow through my sides. And
oh, that's beautiful, Joe.
Thank you.
All right, so let's do this. We'll stop. We'll pause. Amy will come in. Let's find out what's coming up after the news on WGN. Amy Guth is in the studio. What's coming up on your show?
You know, I'm really excited about this first story that we're talking about, and because it is the 20th anniversary of the movie Office Space. And so we're taking a look at that iconic red swing line stapler and what that did for the company. It didn't exist in red prior to that film. That was done by props because they needed it to pop on the screen.
No kidding. And
now it is their second best selling product. They resisted the idea first of making one because they thought, oh, there's some, you know, language in this film. The stapler is not exactly a hero. It's kind of this icon of misery. And so they resisted it and they find it. And now it's a top product for them. So we're going to be talking about that to start the show.
Such a great way to describe it. An icon of misery.
Red stapler. Poor Milton, red stapler.
The red stapler.
But we have a little bit longer show today. I'm going to talk up to pregame. And so I'm going to go to 1:30 and after the 1 o'clock, in the 1 o'clock hour, rather. I'm going to talk with Danny Ecker from Crane's Chicago Business about lots of stuff going on here today in the city, primarily about co-working spaces and how their space is at a premium in the city. We're running out of room big enough for co-working spaces, but also there was a little bit of breaking news this morning, another story from Sterling Bay about a building they would like to put on Michigan Avenue.
So, not a small one either. I saw a little bit about that.
Quite
we
big.
Never got around to it. Have a really good show, Amy Guth.
Thanks so much.